What the hell?
Ryan got up from under a gas tank at once and found Hun and Poet standing in the shadows with grim expressions on their faces.
What's going on?
The whole damned convoy just drove by. Looks like they're on their way out of the ville.
I stuck my head out the door when no one was watching and got a real good look at some of them. It was our wags, all right, and they were all running light, too, way up high on their suspensions, like their cargoes had been unloaded.
Shit,
we're in a world of hurt now. We can't hostage the refinery for the wags if they're gone who knows where.
Zeal might be selling them off. There are lots of barons who pay large for something like the MCP. Baron Zeal could already have his buyers lined up.
We've got to go after them.
Yeah. Chase and chill.
Yeah, but we've got to figure they're gonna have a good lead on us. The shift doesn't change for a while yet.
Don't worry. Whatever time we lose, well, then we'll make it up on the road.
The next half hour was one of the hardest in Ryan's life. Like his companions, he had to just sit there, waiting for the time to wind down so he could get out of the plant. This, while every fiber in his body screamed for him to haul out the Blackhawk, blast his way free, and catch the convoy before it left Virtue Lake. The reason he didn't was simple. He could see the value of having the refinery secretly mined. Even if they couldn't use the explosives the way they'd planned, and there was still a chance that they might, he could foresee a time when the mines could be useful. For payback, if nothing else. Ryan knew he couldn't shoot his way clear, because that would have given away the fact that they had been inside, messing around.
Good. Now let's go. I hate that stupid thing.
Then we'll just have to wait until a good third of the workers are filing out. Then we'll join. We'll have the least chance anybody will give a shit about us. All right. Let's go.
Ryan, Hun, and Poet mingled in with the harried, emaciated workers. They didn't seem all that excited to leave. In fact, their faces were as blank as dolls. Deep, dark bags weighed down their eyes. The three did the best they could to fit in. Hun donned her cap, Poet slouched a bit, and Ryan took his eye patch off again.
All right, back to the sec-wag.
I'm driving. Poet, you ride in the front with me.
Ooh, am I ever glad to see you. Yeah, you like that, don't you, baby?
Can you get us our blasters, too?
Already got them.
Everybody in. Let's make this quick.
Whoa! Where are you going, Ryan?
We've got to get the crew out of jail. We might not be back this way.
Poet leaned in from the back seat.
You're right, Carter. We've got to try to free them now. We're not going to get a better chance.
Hun?
Yeah, Ryan?
Give me my blaster.
Ryan pushed the wag to the limit, smoking the tires around corners. On the straightaways, he highballed it. As the prison came into view over the low rise ahead, Ryan could see the jailers scattered around the site. Two of them were taking turns jabbing long sticks down into the second row of cells. Long sticks with sharp metal points. Two other jailers were leaning against the hut. It looked like they were resting. The fifth was nowhere in sight. Without hesitation and without slowing, Ryan veered straight for the pair doing the poking.
Cover your faces.
The two jailers looked up from their fun, astonished to see the sec-wag leave the road and roar straight for them at 60 miles an hour. The jailer bounced, sprawling over the grill and through the open windshield. For a second, the guy's nose was practically in Poet's lap.
Get the fuck out!
The war captain's boot shoved the man back onto the hood. Ryan raised his Ruger. Ryan swung the wag in a bone-jarring 180, sending the sec man's mutilated body flying off the hood. The second poker man stood stock still, trying to figure out what to do. Finally, he decided. He threw down the tool of his trade and ran for his life.
Poet, get that other bastard!
Poet brought the adjustable butt of his Car 15 to his shoulder. Hit half a dozen times, the man stumbled and fell, sliding face first over the bars of a cell. Swerving to the left, Ryan fought to bring the wag in line with the little jailer's hut. The wag hesitated, still sliding sideways on the smooth ground between the rows of cells.
Ah, shit!
Woo! This one's mine!
Hunniker clubbed the window with her 10-gauge. Hun's 10-gauge poured smoke from its double barrels and out through the freshly smashed rear passenger window. The fourth jailer knelt beside the hut, which was the only cover he had, and continued to fire at them with his machine pistol. There was a shaky hand on the trigger. Bullets sprayed around the onrushing Wag, but not into it. Both Ryan and Poet opened fire over the hood.
Keep hot!
My baby's ready to go!
Poet moved towards their last kill.
This guy's done. Don't even have to check the rest.
Gotta be one more.
What? In the hut?
Let's find out.
Hey now! Anybody in there? Uh-huh. Thought so.
The double dose of double-aught buck had cut a ragged 2-foot gash in the side of the shack at about knee height. The impact against the wall of the structure raised a big cloud of dust. Hunt shifted the shotgun to her left and drew her Beretta from the small of her back. She ducked her head low around the corner of the shack's doorway and stole a look inside.
Oh, you're a tough one.
Got the keys?
Poet was just straightening from one of the dead jailers.
Got the keys.
They hurried to the nearest cell, and Poet knelt and unlocked the door. Lowe's, the cook for Warwag 1, stared up at them. The relief on his face was almost comical.
Holy shit! I never thought I'd ever see your ugly mugs again!
Hold out your arms, Lowe's.
Ryan and Poet grabbed onto Lowe's and pulled him up.
Phew! Thanks.
Don't mention it.
Abe, give me your hand.
Thanks, guys. Zeal and Shabazz took about a dozen of the crew away. Must have been 40 minutes ago they took Trader, too. I didn't get a look, but it sounded like they had the whole convoy up and running.
While Poet and Han moved down the line of cells, freeing their comrades, Ryan handed Abe one of the jailer's machine pistols.
We're going after the convoy and Trader, but we only got the one Wag. We need maybe four more to carry everybody.
Well, here come two right now.
A pair of Sekwags zoomed over the crest of the street. They were really flying, dropping by to check out all the gunfire, no doubt. Ryan didn't have to warn anybody about avoiding the tires, engine compartments, and fuel tanks. The lead Wag's windshield shattered, then the vehicle slewed in a long, out-of-control skid. The second Wag swerved to avoid a collision and took dozens of rounds at side window and door height. Over the sights of a Blackhawk, Ryan saw the torsos inside kicked around by the volley of lead. Both Wags slammed sideways to a stop against the curb. One of them half-hopped it before coming to a halt.
Good job, everybody.
This is all we're gonna get, Poet. Too much blaster fire. The Baron's whole set force is going to be coming this way soon.
Yep. Time to go.
Come on, everybody! We've got to roll!
All the captives ran for the three commandeered set Wags, jamming themselves in like old-time clowns at a circus. Only these clowns were dirty-faced savages, hanging out the windows waving submachine guns. Ryan dropped his Wag into gear and beelined for the street. The Wag picked up speed very slowly, and the steering had gone all soft.
Hey! You seem to be riding a little low.
That's your fault, Lowe's, for feeding us so good.
Ryan wasn't worried about the quality of their transportation. Even as loaded down as the Wags were, they could make much better time than the convoy. Assuming, of course, that the springs didn't bottom out on a deep pothole in the road and make them break an axle. Ryan was worried about the barricade and the Sekmen that he knew would be waiting there, ready for them. Palmer the Guardian knelt on the cliff edge, on the very rim of his world, and stared southwest across the desolate plain. He could see the spiraling dust cloud from the war caravan, like a tornado whipping over the desert. Palmer knew that the spirit in the mist had called these things to it, and he was unafraid. There would be much blood, and the mist would be greatly satisfied. In the months to come, there would be good hunting, seasonable weather, and many male babies. The clan had been preparing for this day for months. They had been awaiting it for better than 10 decades. It had been foretold in the diaries of First Palmer, a collection of lengthy handwritten documents that had been handed down from guardian to guardian since the apocalypse. Much of the clan's lifestyle and belief system was based on these diaries. First Palmer had found several women and multiplied with them. He also multiplied with the female offspring of those unions, in effect setting the standard for the group's conjugal philosophy. The diaries had laid out detailed plans for the defense of the road, which subsequent Palmers had followed to the letter. Working from the diagrams, the Palmers had carefully expanded and deepened their anti-tank trenches. Now they were much higher than a man's head and longer than five men laid head to foot. And they were hidden. The Klansmen had buttressed and reinforced with timber and rock the fixed machine gun positions above the cliff face on either side of the road, and they had positioned, only after much grueling labor, a series of enormous rock falls along the cliff edges. These man-made avalanches were designed to crush anything attempting to climb the road below, or failing that, to at least block in an attacking wag, fore and aft, so it couldn't maneuver its weapons and it couldn't escape the mountain men. Palmer the Guardian knew that only the men of the group were to fight. Much of the time of the females of all ages was spent in collecting, cleaning, and preparing the root of the Devil's Club for consumption. According to the legend passed down since Skydark, a Plopinax Horridum, a member of the ginseng family, had been the Spirit in the Mist's gift to First Palmer. It flourished on the slopes of the mountain and was easy to spot with its broad green leaves and above-ground canes that were covered with thousands of yellow, needle-like thorns. The plant's creeper, the root-like sucker vine that grew just under the soil, contained the magic elixir. One only had to peel the bark away and chew the pithy inner stem. It vanquished pain and gave a man the strength of three. Though their parents were addicted, the children weren't born in a similar condition. The root seemed to have no effect on the development of the clan's fetuses. None that could be sorted out, anyway. A much bigger problem was the limited nature of the Palmer gene pool, which was more of a puddle, really.
Damn it. Do I have any more?
Ugh. He looked around for a woman, and seeing one standing at the machine gun post farther along the cliff edge, waved for her to come in a hurry. The woman approached Palmer the Guardian, bearing on her head a large basket woven of pine needles. She was indistinguishable from 9/10 of her fellow clanswomen, cross-eyed, slack-mouthed, waistless, stocky, and pregnant. She lowered the basket to her hip, tipped it down, and offered its bounteous contents to him. It was heaped with chunks of freshly peeled Devil's Club. He popped a fresh chunk in his mouth and began to chew. His molar teeth were worn down flat like a cow's or an elk's from so many years of grinding the stringy root to extract the psychoactive juice.
That's good. Sit down, why don't you?
Without so much as a peep, the woman sat next to him on the rocks. She remained placid, almost catatonic, as he absent-mindedly stroked her stringy hair, then her shoulders, and reaching through the armholes of her loose shift, her bare breasts. Her pregnancy was far enough advanced to show in her breasts, and her belly had begun to swell. When he fondled her, she stared off into the middle distance, not seeing the oncoming war party, or if seeing it, not caring in the least. The tiniest of smiles was on her face, as she too chewed.
You know, there's still some time before they get here. No! Away with you, woman!
Chewing his plug furiously, Palmer pulled back from the lookout to check on his fighters and make sure that they hadn't succumbed to temptation as well.